You're listening to Dig Deep on KAXE, KBXE, and also on our podcast. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Heidi Holton, along with our liberal commentator, Aaron Brown, our conservative commentator, Chuck Marone. I made eye contact. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you for that eye contact.
Yeah,
I hope you noticed, really made it special.
Since I pointed it out to you. I
appreciate that.
So we're here today to start this conversation about something. It may not seem big to everybody, but it's a big deal to the change of the landscape of rural Minnesota, northern Minnesota, and closing of Herberger's or Yonkers in the Duluth area, and kind of what that means to our region. And so let's start there, I guess, what this organization...
I was actually just thinking about this because I haven't shopped at... I'm not a regular Herberger shopper at this point. I'm really not a shopper, period. I hate... going to the mall, the stores, and so, like, even my clothes now, I get, like, ordered. I order them and have them sent in and try them on and send them back. I like that a lot better. But I distinctly remember as a kid, and this will maybe date me a little bit, all my clothes came from JCPenney's. You could order out of the catalog. I remember looking at it like in June and July in the summer. And if you didn't have your clothes ordered by mid-July, you probably weren't going to get them by the time school started. And that your size might be gone by the time you made the order because it's going to take 4 to 6 weeks to get there. But Herberger's was the place we went for as a kid for like... clothes for Christmas ball, or clothes for like the first communion thing you had to go to, or clothes for like the nice event you had to do. That was the place where I bought like my first tie, my dress pants, the really like nice shirt that I kept way too long because I didn't want to part with it. I remember looking at it as like a 30-year-old going, I wore this 12 years ago and I've not worn it since and I'm not going to wear it again. Finally giving it to like the Goodwill. Herberger's does have like a certain amount of nostalgic feelings for me because it was an era in Brainerd for me growing up where that was like the place you went to get really good stuff.
And it was the case where I was from on the range as well. Virginia had a Herberger's that went down in the same rash of closures. And we had the Penny's in Hibbing and the Herberger's. And I got to say, the Penny's in Hibbing closed last year. And that was a devastating blow to me as a pear-shaped man with a widely fluctuating weight. I found myself back at the Penny's many a time trying to get...
Adjusting up and down.
Up and down and over and up, yeah. You got to try to get the right thing, and it was affordable.
You look good. I mean, you never come in here with the sweatpants on, which I think is like the standard response.
No, but these were purchased... I don't want to get into it, but anyway.
Well, and they provided that when I was growing up, the same town as Chuck in Brainerd.
Right.
I remember, you know, I was a chubby young girl. You
husky.
Know?
I was husky.
Well, the boys' pants were called husky. It's what my brother got, and I got pretty plus. You know, but
are you serious?
Do.
Is that what they call?
Yeah, which I didn't think.
Because I was always,
I was,
I mean,
pretty plus.
When
that
I joined,
means more.
I joined the Army on my 17th birthday. I was 6 feet tall. I weighed 123. So I never had, like, I was, my problem was always finding pants long enough for the skinniness of my waist. It was like getting a belt. Yeah, that's not my problem anymore, but that was my problem back then. JCPenney's, you know, you would order out of the catalog. And you would get like a certain size, and they were either going to fit around the waist and then be like knickers, or they were going to, you know, go down to the floor.
Yeah, you have to roll them up. Now, my mom was a seamstress of sorts, so she would usually order up and then alter, and then I'd have, you know, maybe the whole school year if she altered it down and then was able to take it in and out, so...
Husky, though. That
husky.
Doesn't seem...
Yeah.
They don't do that explains, today, do they?
Is well, it? No, but, you know, okay. The damage has been done.
Yes, but, yeah.
Oh,
so obviously they were emotional in our growing up, these stores, right?
Very close to us. And
it's where you bought your Mother's Day presents.
But it's,
remember the Herberger's,
yeah, and it's where you bought your school... We went to school clothes shopping, mm-hmm. and, you know, so there was this tie. But I'd say even that being the case for us... Gen Xers, loosely speaking, or even baby boomers before, you go before, not that long ago, before World War II, and these stores were almost the interlopers coming in as the big chain stores. And I think I can't go an episode without talking about my research that I'm doing, but the big store in Hibbing in the 1920s, the time the town moved, was the Itasca Mercantile, which was a locally owned department store. And it was multiple floors. It followed the department store model that you'd find at Macy's or Gimbel's. And it was the store where everybody went in town. And it served the same purpose. It was just locally owned. Or it wasn't part of a franchise, I guess is probably the better term, because some of those stores, I think, are locally owned. They're just franchised. So what we're waxing nostalgic for wasn't always the thing. And I think what we're watching as these economic trends come and really shape the relationship between a town or a place like a region like ours, northern Minnesota, and the businesses that serve the population of those places. And we've watched ebbs and flows, and I really feel like this is another step in that story.
My grandmother used to work at the Francis Shop downtown. Mm-hmm. Again, not disparaging anyone, but I always thought of that like the old lady clothes store, which maybe it was. You're kind of nodding.
Yeah, it was. Okay. I didn't go there when I was growing up, but you knew what it was.
Yeah, and then my grandma was an elderly woman. She passed away at age 72, and she worked up to like 3 months before she passed away. Beautiful woman. And I remember going in and visiting her in the downtown and walking through the store and my mom being all uptight because I was creating a ruckus and all that. At some point, and I think it was after what we called the new mall, which is now like the old Westgate Mall that's where Herberger's was, when that mall opened, Francis Shop closed in the downtown and it moved out to what was the old mall then, the original East Brainerd Mall, and became a little cubby in there for a while, and then it went out of business too. When Herberger's was closing, I found this really interesting. I did a little request on the community like history Facebook page that someone's created about the Brainerd Lakes area. And I asked, I don't remember a lot of the places downtown. Can the people here just list some of the clothiers that they remember? And the Francis Shop came up. That was one of them. But all of a sudden, there was this list, and there had to have been 40, 45 of them that people listed out. And some of them had been there for a long time. JCPenney's used to be downtown. Sears, Montgomery Ward's, these used to be things that were downtown that then moved to the mall when the mall opened up. But there were all these kind of little customized kind of specialty shops from places where you could get different types. You know, there was men's shoe store, women's shoe store. There was a hat store where you could just get
haberdashery.
Hats. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Harry Truman was a haberdasher. He ran a hat shop.
Yeah. You look at this fascinating ecosystem of businesses. And the thing is it kind of correlates to like the floats on the 4th of July parade. I remember as a kid there being all these like odd places, and now it's not that way anymore. All of these places were, to one degree or another, part of the community. They maybe were around 6 months and went away. Maybe they were around for decades. I know like Brecken's was one that was is downtown that moved out and is still at the mall. I think is still at the mall. I don't know. I haven't been there for a while.
I think it is.
The thing that astounded me was I knew there were more. I knew there were a lot. I didn't realize there was that depth of an ecosystem of just clothiers. Forget all the other little things that were downtown. Just the clothiers. It was astounding the sheer number that we had before this era of consolidation and kind of closing things down.
One interesting fact, a data point for our conversation. I was just researching this. The comparison between 1915 and 2015, as a percentage of a family's budget, clothing has changed dramatically. Clothing as a percentage of a family's budget is much smaller now than it would have been a century ago when the shops were locally owned. It was expected that you'd pay more and support. Well, it really wasn't an option to do anything else. But when the clothing was produced more locally, sold more locally, people paid more for the clothing, and that was just a fact of life. And as we watched the sourcing on our clothes change to reduce cost, we, I think, saw the ownership models and the advent of the chain store and then eventually the malls that, and now the box stores and so on, as we watch this change.
Let's follow that thread for a second, because I feel like this is a critical shift that is often thrown, especially here in the U.S. and like our macroeconomic conversation, in this ultimately positive light. look, today you spend less on food, you spend less on clothing, you spend less on things than people did 100 years ago. 100 years ago, oh my gosh, you had to spend all this money because the clothes were created locally and sourced locally and bought locally. Boy, the food was grown locally and then, you know, sold in a store locally. And that guy at the shoe store, he got like ridiculous margins because there wasn't all this competition. And point out, isn't the competition great? It's driven down prices for everyone. And yes, that's very true. That as a narrative is true. Here's like two side effects of that. And I'm going to focus on one from the family side first, because I think what Aaron said is really fascinating. Clothing is a lot less of your budget today, but what is more? Housing. Mm-hmm. People spend way more on housing. Our houses are bigger, yes, but not appreciably. You know, they're bigger in a sense, but not as big as what the cost has gone up. What we see now is that housing is no longer, again, sourced locally. You're not getting your loan from your local bank. If it does originate at your local bank, it's quickly sold onto a secondary market and financed. What we've done is we've set up a housing model that really benefits securitization and Wall Street investment. We've made something that was like local and rather inefficient into something that was international and very efficient and very profitable for people kind of at the top of that food chain. The net result of that has been housing prices have gone way up because you can get more money now to buy a house. It's kind of in house inflation. Clothing has been the opposite, and food has been the opposite. The net effect of these systems has actually driven down the prices locally, but again, resulted in huge profits and huge gains for people at the top of these hierarchies. What we've really done from a family standpoint is not make families any wealthier. We've just changed like the distribution of money as it flows through local systems. It now is very efficient in the terms of money flowing into a region like the Brainerd Lakes region or the Iron Range, very efficiently flows out of the region now. Like as quickly as it comes in, it flows out. And it finds its way to tops of these hierarchical economic chains very, very quickly. In some ways, if you're sitting in the Treasury Department or at the Federal Reserve and you're looking at the macroeconomy, you're like, wow, this thing is really humming, it's really buzzing, it's really doing great. If you're sitting here in Grand Rapids, if you're sitting here in Brainerd, if you're in Hibbing, you're like, why? Clothing is way cheaper today. Why am I not feeling any wealthier? Why am I not getting ahead? Why is my community seeming to be struggling? And I think that these are the inherent trade-offs of this model.
Yeah, I can get a barrel of cheesy poofs for a dollar.
Right.
You know, you can live on that.
Well, no. I think it's important to note, and maybe just pause.
It all goes that back to your pants size. Yeah.
Exactly. Hefty, what did you say, hefty size?
Husky.
Yeah. So I think it's important to note that Herberger's as a business was profitable. When you break down the profit and loss statement of Bon-Ton, the parent company, Herberger's was profitable. Bon-Ton, the parent company of Herberger's, was not. It was loaded up with debt. Why was it loaded up with so much debt? Because what it did is it was a company simply to acquire other companies. So it acquired Yonkers. It acquired it acquired Herberger's. It acquired all these other places. And in doing so, it loaded up on debt in kind of like your hedge fund, you know, kind of way. And the idea was, we'll consolidate all these together, we'll create some efficiencies, and we'll use that to pay off the debt. And the parent company, they failed. They did it wrong. It didn't work out. And so the judge in bankruptcy court forced the liquidation of Herberger's. If Herberger's was a standalone company, we'd still have it.
That's hardly the only example of this, because it's hardly, not just retail. Yeah. I'm looking at newspapers and radio stations. I'm looking at all kinds of businesses that have done this. And in fact, you could even look at mining, another industry I watch pretty closely. The mines are doing great right now. They are producing great returns, despite the uncertainty over trade with China, despite the uncertainty over tariffs. And the demand is there right now. And so they're selling their product. But what has happened, what has changed from 30 or 40 years ago, and certainly from 50 or 60 years ago, is that the amount of workers is way, way down because they've become so brutally efficient. And what the mines figured out, especially after the 1980s, the localized depression, I would call it, on the Iron Range, what happened is they figured out how to mechanize their economic decision-making, you know, so that when market conditions reach certain points, they flip a switch and the mines shut down. You know, what was happening, what caused the bankruptcy of a lot of big companies was they were way overproducing through what should have been idle time. And so what they've got is an enormously profitable and efficient mining industry that's doing very, very well, but that leaves the communities that serve that mining industry in a lot more distress and a lot more with a lot more uncertainty. You know, we were in 2016, we were all talking about how bad it was. And here we sit in 2018 and it's great, you know.
Right.
And we know that these booms and busts are coming on a 2 or 3 year cycle. Now they used to be 10 years and now it's 2 or 3 years up and down. That's a tremendous amount of uncertainty. And I don't know that the retail situation is all that different at this point.
What we have done is we have, in the name of efficiency, traded away our stability. In the name of creating an economy that is more efficient, can create essentially the low, low prices and get things really churning and heat up M2, which is the Fed's term for how quickly the velocity of money is around the country. If we can get that up there and get things moving, we can create a really efficient economy. And it's true. But what happens is the trade-off is that our local communities become less stable. They become less resilient. You can rely on them less. They're more prone to booms and busts, just like third world economies are. And we find ourselves, even in what all macro statistics say is a really successful economy, with actual reality on the ground not reflecting that. And that's, to me, like the existential crisis of America 2018.
In our next segment, we'll talk more about this retail crisis in rural Minnesota, northern Minnesota, and from a worker's perspective. This is Dig Deep on KEXE KBX.